It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on a brand new month. The final month of summer 2020. L'été damné, l'été triste. The sad summer, the damned summer. The summer of COVID comes to a close in about 19 more days. Yeah, about 3 weeks, give or take. And then we enter autumn, when everything dies. Because I'm a little ray of sunshine, and I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn, and headon.live is where you'll find us anytime on the interweb tubes, but live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and that's where we tuck away the chat room, the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is all of that during the 3 hours in which this program is live. And you're welcome to jump in and participate. It's free. It's easy. If you've never done it before, try it. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password and hop right in. And early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky will all be happy to see you and greet you merrily and gladly. You'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, also doesn't fold space in months that have R's in them and 103-degree temperatures. So he will remain Sparky and not become Man Cave for a little while longer, at least. Sparky, of course, is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. And thanks to Steve for the new supply of masks. They are much appreciated. And they bring at least a somewhat more robust sense of security than the typical throwaway stuff. So thank you, Steve and Ms. Karen, Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. Thank you very kindly indeed. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so that means that we have thanks to send out this Tuesday to our first of the month subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Shorty in L.A. And thanks very much to Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you to Bob at Home Dirts. Thank you to Thomas in Sunny San Rafael, our buddy Tom. Thank you to Rusty. And thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thank you all, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. Of course, this is the first broadcast of a new month. That means that Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table. Well, I tell you what, in this era, especially in a place like Wisconsin, they could have very well used a firebrand like Bruce during this struggle for the soul of that state. Very much so, indeed. I've never known a better Democrat than what Bruce was, a better progressive, a better liberal, a better union man. I mean, he was all of those things and so much more. And gosh, do we miss him. But back when he was still among us, he sponsored a challenge at the beginning of every program. And when he passed on, our buddy Laborman, another great member and advocate for organized labor, stepped into the void, as did Ralphs in Wisconsin, as did an anonymous individual to put together and keep Bruce's challenge going. And so that's what's on the table this evening. $200 a show. The ordinary amount that we try to raise on any given day. But if we raise the $200 this evening, Laborman and Ralphs and our anonymous friend will double it. So it would be wonderful if we could get off and running and knock out that challenge this evening so that we can get a good running start on the month of September. Thank you very kindly to Women Standing. Thank you very much indeed. There's only $175 remaining of the challenge now. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Now, this is, and hopefully you'll have some company and we'll get that knocked out and I can hush about fundraising for maybe the other 2 hours. Program note. I explained yesterday that Ferg's new job means that I have to pick him up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Hopefully he will be right out the door at 4 o'clock and I'll be here and in plenty of time to be on air on time. But for as long as this continues, I will run the risk of being late to the mic on the days when Ferg works. And so that would be tomorrow, which is Wednesday, and Thursday, and he's off Friday. So Wednesday and Thursday of this week, there's a chance I'm late to the microphone. And that's, it is what it is. I hate that phrase. I've gotten really tired of it. But if I'm late to the mic, you'll know why, and I'll try to tweet something out or Facebook something out as I'm sitting there waiting and knowing I'm going to be late, but hopefully I won't be. Okay? Beautiful. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, 9x9x9, all aboard the USS Trump-tanic. Yeah, the SS Trump-tanic is steaming right at that iceberg. They're going to show that iceberg a thing or two, and we've got good evidence. Well, remember, we celebrate the Titanic intellect, Titanic right-wing intellect on Tuesdays here. And I got one, at the very top of the stack by Titanic right-wing intellect, what we mean is really huge examples of monumental right-wing, in this case, Trumpian stupidity. And golly gee, do we have it. Oh, my goodness, we do. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in a minute. A note to get us started this evening. 007 double-crossed. This was an interesting weekend with so much going on, but a few important events did not go by without notice, and one of the events was the Russian fighter jet, which harassed an American B-52 bomber over the Black Sea, which is considered international airspace. Russia apparently is miffed at Trump for reducing troops in Europe, and of course, Trump is miffed at the... Really? Apparently miffed at Trump for reducing troops in Europe? Perhaps for not reducing them enough? And of course, Trump is miffed at the NATO countries for not at least spending 2% of their GDP on defense. Right now, NATO's saying 9. That's no, of course, in German, to Trump. Also, non in French and non in Spanish, and not just no, but hell no in hell no in British English. Bugger off. Just because, they hate him. Meanwhile, back here at home, Trader Trump's minions at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence are canceling briefings scheduled for September relative to foreign election interference, and have told the Congress that they're only going to provide written intelligence to Congress about potential Russian meddling threats leading up to the November elections. In other words, just like DeJoy at the post office, Director of National Intelligence John the Rat Ratcliffe is going to sabotage this process of the election in attempts to assist Trump in his attempt, his own attempt, to be reelected. Gee, who saw that coming? Ironically, on this day back in 1983, a Russian fighter jet shot down a Korean jet flying from New York's Kennedy Airport to Seoul, South Korea, with a stop in Alaska, where allegedly Sarah Palin saw the plane from her house. Actually, there's some irony involving Sarah Palin during this time period, and that was that she was actually enrolled at the University of Idaho, located in, wait for it, yep, Moscow, Idaho. In all seriousness, though, I know a couple other people that went to that school. In all seriousness, though, a very right-wing John Birch Society-type congressman by the name of Larry McDonald from Georgia was on that ill-fated flight headed for Seoul. And speaking of Seouls, 269 died in that crash, 62 from the States. And, of course, rough, tough guy, you know, Grenada War winner Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, condemned the shooting of the plane, but the Cold War began warming up quite a bit after the 007 incident. That was Flight 007, irony, as Russia and the U.S. would never bond after that incident. Well, I mean, there was that whole glasnost business and perestroika and the fall of the Soviet Union. So here we are, 37 years later, and a Russian plane is harassing one of our fighter jets. No, a Russian fighter jet is harassing one of our B-52s, and a plain Russian named Vlad Putin is harassing our elections. And don't be fooled, fans. This incident this past weekend is just a ruse in attempts to make Americans believe that Putin and Donald Trump are at odds and Putin would never be putting our elections in peril. With the actions this past weekend of the Director of Intelligence, Trump and Putin are bonding very well. I see what you did there, Joey. While all the time, Pam Bondi in Florida is likely assisting Ron Monkey Up DeClantis in another election coup that'll make 2000 look like a James Bond movie starring Brett Kavanaugh and John Roberts. You know, the two current Supreme Court judges that managed to stop the vote count. Well, not really Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh was working for a dim leader at the time. This has been Joey's Journal for Tuesday. It is Tuesday, isn't it? Don't confuse me, Joey. Tuesday, the first day of September, with Giraffe rushing around looking for election fraud in plain sight. And I know there was a bunch of Sturm und Drang over all of that, but our respective air forces, you play cat and mouse with each other rather frequently. The Russians like to fly close to our airspace up in Alaska, and we scramble jets, and then they scramble them over the Black Sea, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But there's another little nugget in Joey's journal, and that is, thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, and thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. We are down to 1:45 to go to meet Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you both so kindly. Hopefully we'll have that all wiped out. Hey, it'd be cool. Do it in an hour, and we got 2 hours of me hushing up about fundraising. Wonderful. Believe me, I would like to hush up about fundraising. No, there's a little nugget in there in what Joey was writing about, namely the business of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence canceling briefings. They claim it was in order to prevent leaks. You can translate that out of the original Magadese and understand that what that means is it is an effort to prevent anyone from knowing even half of the skullduggery that's going to be engaged in, because all the Russian meddling will be on Nitwit Nero's behalf. I mean, for all intents and purposes, Vlad Putin might as well be Donald Trump's campaign manager. Annoying, infuriating, yes. And equally true. But some news does manage to sneak out about the fragility of our electoral process. NBC News reporting, Kevin Collier and Ken Delanian, that internet trolls from Mother Russia formed up a group and created a bullshit baloney news service which real honest-to-goodness freelance American journalists then got sucked into to advance Russian electoral disinformational propaganda. And remember, please, that all of that propaganda does not take the form of Donald Trump is most wonderful president America is ever having. Donald J. Trump is equal to great American presidents like James Madison and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. This is how great Donald J. Trump truly is. It's not just that. They work in other realms too. One of their targets, and oh golly, this particular target is, well, particularly gullible. What a gullible. What it boils down to, the organization, the news aggregator, the news company, the bullshit news company put together by agents of Vlad there in Mother Russia was called Peace Data. And guess what? Their primary focus was on environmental and political and corporate corruption. And in a country like this, well, those kinds of stories, you don't really have to dig real hard for. Consider that just as an example. Consider the recent story out of Ohio where, Senate Majority Leader or the Speaker of the Ohio House, I can't remember which, but he was the top dog in one of the two houses. He got stone cold busted accepting bribes from a hydrocarbon company for laws that would be beneficial to almost that only that company. And it was huge. Huge sums of money. Well, these internet research agency trolls ginned up a bunch of influential Twitter and Facebook personas. We knew they were doing that back in 2016. And they were behind this Peace Data. Really? What kind of fucking name is that? Pardon me, I'm off into the F-bombs already. Hey, is glorious Peace Data website for exposing American kiki political and environmental and corporate corruption. Because there's so much in United States kiki of this. Not like in glorious Mother Russia, where corporations are run by pure and shining oligarchs who are all friends of Vlad Putin and stay away from open windows. The Facebook head of cybersecurity, not really working that hard, is named Nathaniel Gleicher. And he said, it confirms what I think we've all thought. Russian actors are trying to target the 2020 elections and public debate in the U.S., and they're trying to be creative about it. But the second thing it confirms is it's not really working. Really? You can run a loud, noisy influence campaign like the one we saw in 2016, and you get caught very quickly. Or you can try to run a much more subtle campaign, which is what this looks like. And A, you still get caught, and B, when you run a subtle influence campaign, you're sort of working at cross purposes with yourself. You don't get a lot of attention for it. Yeah, but the problem there, and what I suspect Mr. Gleicher is trying to defocus, is the fact that it got out there, and it put its message out, got its job done, before it got caught. Twitter shut down some accounts related to peace data and announced that they were Russian state actors. But yes, peace data's purpose was to sucker in people on our side of the debate, particularly those ever so gullible, eager to be conned members of the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol. In the reporting from NBC News, Ben Nimmo, who runs an outfit called Graphica, issued a report on peace data. This looks like an attempt to target left-wing audiences on a range of issues, but the operation got taken down in the early stages and didn't score measurable impact. That's what they say. The election wasn't the only focus, but to the extent that it was, it looks like the operation wanted to divide Democratic voters the same way the IRA tried in 2016 and succeeded. They left out the "and succeeded" part. And so there I was on Twitter today. I found and saw some. And you know, I checked out his profile picture. You know, he's young and he's white and he's got a really kind of groovy haircut with some serious amounts of product in it. And he said, "I live in California and I'm not going to vote for that corporatist Joe Biden. I'm going to vote for me a Green Party candidate because purity." Meanwhile. Young black men are being shot in the back. Middle-aged black men are being choked to death. But purity party over there, he's going to vote green. In the NBC News article, a freelance journalist who's an American wrote a number of articles for Peace Data. And he said, they DM'd me on Twitter and said, "Hey, do you want to write an article for you? We'll give you $200 for an article." Jesus, you're a cheap date. This journalist didn't want his or her career to be immediately ended by having been found out as a clueless tool of, you know, Russian internet trolls. "I lost my job during COVID and was pretty desperate to earn money just to pay rent." I get that. But $200? So he wrote articles. And apparently the check's cleared. Yet meanwhile, the editor at Peace Data, and this is kind of a clue, isn't it? The editor at Peace Data was an imaginary person named Alex Lacusta. And tried to share stories out of the... Yeah. And of course, the Internet Research Agency is owned by an oligarch who is dear, dear friends with huggable, lovable, snuggleable, cuddleable Vlad Putin. And so this is all going on, but John Ratcliffe, the director of national intelligence, who is not competent for that job now and wasn't when he was proposed a while back, and the idea was laughed out of the room because he got busted for having lied about his involvement in other counterterror investigations. Well, John Ratcliffe doesn't want the Congress to be able to perform its oversight role relative to election security. And so that's what Joey was referring to in his note for the beginning of the program. And hey, thank you, Barbara. Barbara's gotten us down to $120 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge for this first day of September. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you very much indeed. But I promised you a USDA prime example of titanic intellect. In other words, monumental right-wing stupiditas. And I got it right here. Yeah. Any guesses as to who this involves? I mean, we're talking about titanic right-wing stupidity. Why, yes, you're absolutely right. It is Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. Mm-hmm. It was earlier today when one of these ultra-white-wing maggot Trumpanzee Twitter personalities feverishly began thumbing at his keyboard and tweeted the following. Breaking report. Rand Paul has called to subpoena Antifa plane records, hotel records, all travel records, and all funding. The maggot in question is a moron. Yeah, that was yesterday. And former Republican congressional candidate named Chuck Colesto. Chuck Colesto trying to get a few clicks by promising that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head is going to get to the bottom of the funding of Antifa. Because at this point in time, you see, Antifa has taken up residence in the otherwise unused spaces betwixt the ears of various and sundry maggots and just lives there making their little noggins hurt just by being a word. Because bear in mind, Antifa is not a thing. I mean, I'd love to see Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologists, I'd love to see the subpoena. Most subpoenas have to have some sort of an identifier for where the process server is going to go and serve the subpoena. What's this say? To Antifa at Antifa HQ. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's not a lot of help. Okay, we'll direct the subpoena to the president of Antifa. What do you mean? There's no president of Antifa? All right, we're gonna subpoena the board of directors of Antifa. What do you mean they ain't got one? Secretary Treasurer? Ain't got one of those neither. How about the recruiting coordinator? Don't have one of those either, huh? Oh, God. You'll have to make a filth wonder if Maybe this whole Antifa thing's real. Oh, it's got to be real. The entire right wing broadcastosphere wouldn't be going apeshit over something that was completely made up. Wait, wonder whatever happened to all those deadly caravans that Trump said were headed this way back in 2018. We dipped. Well, we'll send a subpoena to the Antifa Ladies Auxiliary. That's what we'll... Ain't got one of those either, huh? Son of a... Well, that just shows how devious and crafty Antifa are. No president, no vice president, no secretary treasurer, no board of directors, no recruiting coordinator, no ladies auxiliary. How about the Antifa youth? What do you mean most Antifa are youngish people? Okay, that's who will... That doesn't exist either? Damn. It's going to be harder than I thought. And he was going to... Remember, Antifa plane records, you know, from the Antifa Air Force. And Antifa hotel records from the Antifa hotel chain. You know, we'll... Antifa hotels. We'll leave the smudge pot on for you. All travel records. And all funding. George Soros has got to be in here somewhere. Oh, we'll that's it. We'll subpoena George Soros for the Antifa records. George Soros. Whose idea was this anyway? I tell you what, listen, Rand Paul, here's an idea for you, buddy. Why don't you subpoena Mazars and Bank of America and Citibank and Deutsche Bank for all of their Antifa records? The litigation on that might be done by the time you're, 112, based on present practice. Oh, see, I knew somebody to have the address. There's James in Illinois, Antifa, Box 2, North Pole. Because you know who has Box 1. Hey, maybe the Tooth Fairy is the agent for service of process for Antifa. Or maybe it's the Lucky Charms Leprechaun. Agnes just yelled through the wall, "Leave my people out of it." Yeah, that's right. Randy in PA points out, you know, they even mispronounce it, so you can't deconstruct the word. Antifa. That must be... That sounds like a group of people who are opposed to good dental hygiene. Yeah, they're anti-tifuses. Well, it's Titanic Tuesday. What'd you want? Silent R. Lamar says, funding help. Hey, Bob, if Rand Paul can find Antifa headquarters, maybe I can hit him up for some funds. Good luck. What I want to see is all those invisible planes of the Antifa Air Force. Their logo is a big toothless smile. Stephen New York points out, Antifa, more GOP, GRU shenanigans. I know what's going to happen with the Antifa subpoena. Look up Antifa.com. Someone is playing a stupid joke. Mark my words, the GOP will use this. Oh, no. Antifa.com redirects to JoeBiden.com. Rotten little rat fuckers. Wow, that's a big, huge thank you. Thank you to Mark. Thank you, Mark, for half a show on me. We're down to $45 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge. That's tremendous, Mark. Thank you so very much. We got a fighting chance on this now. Thank you, Mark. Albert with a note. Bob, investigating who leads Antifa makes as much sense as trying to identify who leads QAnon. Oh, no, QAnon's real, Albert. It's run by Q. Last seen in supporting roles in James Bond movies and Star Trek Next Generation. Now, if Rand Paul really did say he was going to do that, then maybe I should feel sorry for him. Because it must mean that back when Rand Paul's neighbor was trying to teach Rand Paul some basic manners, and failed, but trying, that maybe there was some Dane Bramage involved. Don't know. Ralphs just jumped in. Ralphs is one of the guarantors of Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Woohoo! Thanks, Mark! That makes Ralphs very happy. But that's not... That's just the... Well, Tuesday's tip of the iceberg. But that had to be one of the lead stories. It had to. You know by now that there's a new book coming out because it's getting a lot of pre-publication publicity. A new book by Michael Schmidt. And it's based on a huge number of document reviews, interviews, that sort of thing. And it's really curious because there's a bunch of stuff in the book that somehow or another never made it to the pages of the New York Times, for whom Michael Schmidt works. But one of the things that he reported, and we've talked at great length about this mysterious moment. November 19th, 2019. My God, we're almost to the one-year anniversary. 79 days away from that anniversary. A day that continues to be a source of genuine curiosity. That was the day when, unscheduled, they hustled Nitwit Nero into a limousine instead of putting him on the helicopter, Marine One, and convoyed him all the way to Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And what Michael Schmidt reports in his new book, Trump versus the United States, is that Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek was notified to be on standby to take over the reins of government as acting president should it become necessary to put Nitwit Nero under general anesthesia. Yeah. And then recently, August the 1st, there was another strange emergency visit with little detail to Walter Reed Hospital exactly a month ago today. And he was put on standby to become acting president on that one, too. A reporter by the name of Don Winslow pointed out that there have been a series of these events. Of course, behaving like the press flacks for an aging Soviet dictator, the MAGAT comms team has said, "Well, no, there's nothing wrong with glorious President Donald J. Trump. He's in glorious, fabulous health. Only look at how vigorously he plays the game of flog, or golf. It's not a game we play very much in Mother Russia. This is why we pronounce it flog. It's how we play. We flog golf ball. But no, Donald J. Trump is not, definitely not, having series of mini strokes. His picture of health. This, of course, does not explain why those very odd trips to Walter Reed were made. And we've talked about why that might have been. Remember, it coincides with the first briefing of the White House and the Pentagon about the emerging epidemic at that time in Wuhan. Don Winslow, the journalist I mentioned a moment ago, in his tweet said, "One of the benefits of making videos that garner 5 million plus views is that you hear from a lot of people, including whistleblowers inside the Trump administration. I've received 3 communications saying that during his term, Trump has suffered a series of mini strokes." In the medical terminology,
okay, I found this on the web for a series of...
Shut up, Siri. I wasn't looking for a series of mini strokes. Don't. Mini strokes are, that's a vernacular term that refers to something called transient ischemic attacks. TIAs. They can happen periodically. On their own, or they can also be harbingers of what Fred Sanford used to refer to as the big one. Stoke the stroke. And so, just as an example, Don Winslow provided the following audio. Nitwit Nero was making a speech about Israel, and it was around the Christmas season, and this is what it sounded like.
"Let us rethink old assumptions and open our hearts and minds to possible and possibilities. And finally, I ask the leaders of the region, political and religious, Israeli and Palestinian, Jewish and Christian and Muslim, to join us in the noble quest for lasting peace. Thank you. God bless you. God bless Israel. God bless the Palestinians. And God bless the United States. Thank you very much. Thank you."
The United States. Is that a mini stroke, or is that he's just had so much Adderall that his mouth is drier than a snake's belly in a wagon rut? You tell me. This book looks like it's probably going to sell pretty good, because it's got lots of juicy details, including Michael Schmidt reporting that Moscow Mitch McConnell dozed off during a classified briefing on Russia.
Well, it's like, why we are not expecting Addison Mitchell McConnell to stay awake during briefing. It's not like he had already not heard it from us.
Yeah, just dozed right off.
What? Do I get to put another Supreme Court judge on yet? The actual passage from Schmidt's book on the mysterious November trip to Walter Reed, describing Trump's unexpected November 2019 visit to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, he reports the White House wanted Mike Pence on standby to take over the powers of the presidency temporarily if Trump had to undergo a procedure that would have required him to be anesthetized. How would you have even known? The vice president never had to take this step. God bless the United States. You know, I have said, and I mean no harm by it. Certainly, I'm just observing a potential factual line. We've talked about it. There is a chance that he exits the White House feet first. God bless the United States. Steve in New York says, can I just interject some really good news today? I just received word that my partner in Ottawa successfully defended his dissertation. He is now doctor. Well, if that doesn't get a cowbell, I don't know what the hell does. Congratulations, Steve. And please pass the congratulations on to your partner. That's wonderful news. So the thing is, now that Schmidt's book is coming out, and by the way, Darlene in Connecticut reminds us that the Nitwit Nero campaign has now demanded that CNN fire a commentator, Joe Lockhart, a member of a previous administration. He was press secretary for Bill Clinton. He suggested that Nitwit Nero was rushed to Walter Reed to treat a potential stroke or TIA. Darlene sending the note along says, stoke the dot, dot, dot. A statement issued from the chop shop, otherwise known as the press room of the or the communications room of the White House, said, CNN should fire Joe Lockhart. I mean, why don't we just do this all in a Russian accent? We know now, thanks to the Senate's report, that they're up to their eyeballs in Russians. CNN should fire Joe Lockhart, lifetime failure, who thought it was a great idea for fellow looser Michael Dukakis to put on that stupid helmet for knowingly pushing conspiracy theory about President Trump's health. President Trump is marvelously, gloriously healthy specimen of American masculinity. If another CNN employee said things about Barack Obama, they'd be fired immediately. So same standard should be applied here. That is, of course, unless CNN is complicit in smear campaign in order to level playing field against Joe Biden, somebody who truly has lost a step. Meanwhile, while video is out there of Nitwit Nero needing assistance to shamble down a gentle ramp at West Point, while Joe Biden is out riding a bicycle and cracking wise with the press crew. Have you picked out your vice president yet, Joe? Yeah. Who is it? You. Hopefully that'll secure Joe Lockhart's position there. It's a nice gig being a paid commentator. I wouldn't know, but I hear it's nice. Subject line, God bless the United States. Not sure if you recall, Brother Deacon Asa says, but when that particular speech aired, the Viking warrior Pharaoh Princess told us that the episode looks and sounds like the lead-up to a massive stroke. You did do that, didn't you, dear?
Oh, you have to listen to the program, honey. I can't repeat myself. You said back when Nitwit Nero was saying, God bless you, nice stash, you said, just based on your observations of as having been a nurse, that you thought he was on the way to the big one. Oh, yeah, she says. Okay. You know, I'm just going to have to put a mic in there. I can run. Yeah, sure. Why not? I can run a mic cable. Drill a little hole in the wall. Not big enough for Sam the studio serpent to get through, but yeah. Run a mic cable in there and just, it's not a bad idea. Hey, fuck that. We could go cordless. Go cordless. Everybody skate backwards. So I guess they probably want Sanjay Gupta's head on a platter, too. Oh, but first, a note. Antifa and the Colonial Air Force. Bob, being a student of history, I want to come in later. The Air Force organizational chart, Antifa can be thrown into it as well. Now, considering the Continental Air Force never actually existed and Antifa is an amorphous organization, where did Senator Dumbshit, the junior senator from the Common Poverty of Kentucky, ooh, Common Poverty, good one, use his time better, like avoiding his neighbor? By the way, I'd like to see his neighbor running against him for his Senate seat. I think he could tackle that problem. Your buddy Dave in the blind. Bill in Allentown says, Antifa, they probably don't know how to spell fetuses, so maybe that's what they think Antifa means. Well, anything's possible on Titanic Tuesday, Bill. And Irwin up in Montana reminds us, let us not forget that the original Antifa was an actual group in 1930s Germany. The English word Antifa is a loan word from the German Antifa, taken as a shortened form of the word Antifaschistisch, a nickname of Antifaschistische Aktion, 1932 to 1933, a short-lived group which inspired the wider Antifa movement in Germany. Short-lived indeed. I wonder why. Oh, maybe because the German government treated that Antifa the way that Trump wants to treat this one?
I think they should be declared a domestic terror organization.
And by the way, the guy that we focused on in the program for Moran Monday, the guy that got shot in Portland, well, I mean, yeah, he got shot in the chest, but he was in Portland. What Nero described,
and they shot a religious man.
Like he was walking around in a collar and cassock. Oh, my God. The stupid. It hurts. Is likely possibility. Stephen, New York, pointing out that Donald Jesus Trump merely has Russian flu. But of course. Hey, Steve. Jude wants to know what your partner's dissertation was on. She said, congratulations, as this is an extraordinary achievement. So we all want to celebrate with you and with him. Regarding Trump's comment on opening your mind, Silent R. Lamar says, for people to ask Trump to open their minds, I say with all due respect, sir, you first must have a mind to open. And, of course, the old motto comes to mind, especially with regard to Trump. A mind is a terrible thing to get wasted with way too much Adderall. Lee in New York pointing out, hey, Bob, Trump has the best health, just like his bestie, Kim Jong-un. Oh, this is going to be a good night. You guys are all in rare form.
Hmm.
Oh. This is a cowbell for the for the ages. Dave number 11. Oh, going. It's back. It's he's going deep. Oh, it's out of here. Hey, wait, I just heard a windshield smash. It was out of the ballpark. Punchline. Mini Strokes is also Donald Trump's porn name. That's two cowbells. Mini Strokes for the tiny. You get it. This is interesting, says Steve in New York. Stroke. The section on aphasia. Aphasia gets in the way of a person's ability to use or understand words. Aphasia does not impair the person's intelligence. People who have aphasia may have difficulty speaking and finding the right words to complete their thoughts. They may also have problems understanding conversation, reading and comprehending written words, writing words, and using numbers. Well, we know he has trouble reading words. Of course, that's a problem of long standing, given that he had to cheat to get into Penn, the Wharton School, which was not quite the big deal then that it is now. And if you want to, remember, we call the stress line, because it's named after our dear friend Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. He was on the program talking to me when his stroke hit, and you can hear exactly what aphasia sounds like. And his life was saved that night because of this community. It could be, there's something. There's obviously shit wrong with him. Bad shit wrong with him. I've argued that his tilted forward standing pose is a result of the lifts that he wears in his shoes, but it's also evidence of a neurological problem. His inability to walk down slopes. Remember, he grabbed Theresa May like he wanted a relationship with her when they were walking down a gentle slope at one point. Because he's terrified of taking a header. Well, I mean, when a guy with no real head, I mean, what would you call that? Never mind. Antifa.com. If it's on the web, put most. It must be true, says Flavio. Most people are internet stupid. I am unusual in that from the beginning I took the adage RTFM, read the fucking manual, seriously. And in 1999 purchased a little pocketbook titled The Rough Guide to the Internet, which went a long way to informing me of anything from what does HTML stand for to what are urban legends, so I don't fall for crap like that. About Antifa.com redirecting to JoeBiden.com, anyone can buy and redirect a domain to another website without the permission or coordination from that the person it's being redirected to. Redirecting a domain name is no different than forwarding a telephone number or mailing address. The person on the receiving end can't do much to stop you. No, but that doesn't mean that it's not a lousy piece of Republican maggot rat-fucking, Flavio, because this is straight out of their playbook. This is just a modern electronic cybernetic version of the Canuck letter in 1972 that ran Edmund Muskie out of the race. Suman with a note. Two articles, realistically speaking, two articles caught my attention today. Nate Silver was the only statistician to point out that Trump has discussed us, had a good chance of winning in 2016. Now this. Why Minnesota could be the next Midwestern state to go red. And then Boston Globe article, Biden on track to lose the Electoral College. I have to ask, do you guys understand Biden's strategy at all? I really don't understand why Democrats are so afraid of getting in the mud and fighting. Yeah, I get the whole when they go low, we go high, and the point about not jumping in the mud with the hogs. But unfortunately, elections are won in the mud, and certainly not by going high, as we've learned in 2016. I think our motto should be, when they go low, we kick them in the nuts and squeeze tightly until they fall off. I'm really hoping Biden goes after the wannabe Caesar Disgustus. He's got to close the enthusiasm gap, or I fear he'll lose. I know exactly what you're saying, Suman, and I do not disagree. But there's the question of how you go about doing that. Yesterday, when Joe Biden said he's too weak and he's too scared to call out his nitwit Nero's too weak and too scared to call out his the violent elements of his support. Those are words that are bound to get under his skin. Trump's. The other part of it is to simply let him, and this is dangerous business, it takes a Muhammad Ali to run a rope-a-dope. But I think they're trying to let him punch himself out. They are literally stoking the stroke. And this latest story has, in fact, gotten deep under his orangutan hide. More on that in a moment. I want to see him turn Kamala Harris loose. I want to see the same vigor that she brought to cross-examining and proving Bill Pippi the Frog Barr to be a known perjurer to the hustings. But again, let's remember one thing, Suman. Traditionally speaking, the real campaign for the presidency doesn't get kicked off in earnest until after Labor Day. That is a week from today. We are 2 months and 2 days away from the presidential election. 8 long, tormented weeks of rat fuckery and bilious garbage flowing like an open sewer out of a 10-foot main from the Trump campaign and maggot organizations all over the country. I mean, who sold them the list with my address on it? Business reply mail. It's thick. Pre-sorted standard. Mailed from 22701. Where the fuck is 22701? Let's find that out. Nasty piece of maggot propaganda. And like I said, a thick, heavy envelope. Culpeper, Virginia. Probably Klan headquarters or something. Trump make the and I got a business reply envelope. No postage necessary if mailed in the United States, so, you know, I'll send the damn thing back empty or with a note or, you know, whatever. But I want them to spend the money. But here's the thing, and I don't know, let me check here. And a quick update. Thank you, Sparky. Apparently, Antifa.com redirects to JoeBiden.com, and Sister Carol Baker found out Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, bought a web domain, redirected it to Joe Biden's website, and thinks he's cute. Thank you, Sparky, and thank you, Carol. What a dirtbag. So, what I was going to say is I need some input, and it doesn't have to be right now. I'm just curious. From Ms. Karen, she'll probably know this kind of thing. This return envelope to the Trump campaign, the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, P.O. Box 1776 of Merrifield, Virginia, 22116-9400. 2020 victory survey enclosed. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, I'm trying to figure out who's going to reply to this. Mike Hunt. Ben Dover. Yeah, I'll have to figure that out later. But it's no postage necessary if mailed in the United States, but it's got 3 1-cent stamps on it. Appears to be apples on the stamps. So the question is that parcel set up to cost 3 cents to mail? Is that the going rate for... there's a good one. That could be. I have a big one. Thank you, Steve. You're a hog. That's another... That was a real human being. Twin girls. I'm a hog and you're a hog. Texas. Texas history. Daughter of the Attorney General, I think it was. But is that 3 cents to mail that thing? Why are those 3 1-cent stamps on there when it's already printed? It's already got the block print in the corner, no postage necessary if mailed in the United States. I'd kind of like to know. So, Ron in Raleigh says, does this mean that Steve's partner can now pilot higher and deeper, PhD? I'm asking for an academic friend, yes. It also stands for post hole digger. Steve says, way over my head, the best I can describe is psycholinguistics. Oh, that's an awesome word. The subject matter is high-level statistics, neurology, and all kinds of stuff. I have no idea what it is. Psycholinguistics? Sounds like something that might be applicable to Nitwit Nero. He's a psycho, and there's a problem with his linguistics. Darlene observing, Trump is elderly and not well. But he beats on others all the time about their supposed physical incapacities. Consider what he said about Hillary when she was dehydrated and almost fainted. As for Dukakis and the tank thing, what about Trump behind the wheel of the fire engine thing? Trump looked like a freaking idiot. Would love someone to juxtapose those two photos. Just shows the double standard. It also shows the projection, Darlene. And that moment...
And I remember my mother would say, Donnie, do you like trucks? And I'd say, oh, I do, I do.
And it was weird because her Scots brogue came out in that moment. Fascinating business, huh? Oh, man, Neil, you know how to hurt a guy. Off to margaritas, tacos, and tableside fresh-made guac. Later. Ooh, I love that tableside fresh-made guac. Yum. Randy and PA pointing out, they had a piece on the Today Show on Robin Williams' misdiagnosed brain condition prior to his death. Very interesting. That's sad. Stop it, Bob, says Lee in New York. With the orange oaf in the White House, there's no such thing as traditionally anymore. A post-inauguration first-day achievement of the Russian racist was to file for the 2020 presidential campaign. Waiting for Labor Day to begin campaigning. Yeah, but... that's where we are.
just is.
Now, back to what I said a little bit ago. Apparently, Sanjay Gupta over at CNN was sufficiently creeped out by it all that he offered up some analysis. I guess the White House comm shop will be calling for his dismissal now. And so, you know, this morning they had one of the usual talking heads panels, whatever. They mentioned the passage that I shared with you from Michael Schmidt's book. Wow, 25th Amendment, where are you when we need you? Yeah. Here's Sanjay.
Well, the story doesn't add up. I mean, still, even after all these months, the story still doesn't add up, in part for the reasons that you mentioned. This was a very unusual visit, as John mentioned, on Saturday. Dr. Comley got in the vehicle with the president. That doesn't happen. Typically, the physician, White House physician, is in a separate part of the convoy, the motorcade, because they need to take care of the president if something were to happen. So they need to be able to get to that vehicle. All these things just don't add up. What was interesting, exactly to your point, is that there are lots of capabilities within the White House, and we looked into this. You know, we talked to previous White House doctors. Most things you can take care of in the White House, unless it really comes to some sophisticated imaging. Obviously, anything, as John mentioned, that would require anesthesia, and that's typically either the brain or the heart. That's typically what it involves. So we asked Dr. Comley about it.
Well, time out. It's also the gut. Because anybody who's ever had the steel eel, anybody who's ever had a colonoscopy without anesthesia knows what a painful process that is. And remember, when was it George H.W. Bush whose gut was just full of polyps, and they had to go in and clean? And well, no, because that would have meant that. Dan Quayle was standing by as acting president during the general anesthesia, and the fact that the United States is still here speaks to that not happening. Yeah, maybe Reagan had a gut full of polyps, too. So maybe that's when it was. So, yeah, brain, heart, gut. But you don't take, really, and I mean, I've had my fair share of innard problems, and I got a birth defect, and my large intestine is twisted seven different ways from Sunday. It doesn't go in the ordinary direction that everybody else's does, or that 999,999 people's do. I'm the one in the million that just sort of... So I know a little bit about gut pain. Between that and bouts of pancreatitis, medication-induced. Yeah. You get anesthesia for a colonoscopy, but then again, I don't, that doesn't make any sense. So brain or heart probably does. And although that's a little bit of an omission, I don't think it's really that significant.
At the time, what he subsequently said is that the president did not have any chest pain, nor was he evaluated or treated for any urgent or acute issues. He did not undergo any specialized cardiac or neurological evaluations.
You know, the music, the empty spaces between the notes are music, too. Pay attention to that quote. He didn't go through any evaluations. Sometimes in medicine, things you're observing are simply QED. Quoderat demonstrandum. I think that's right, isn't it, Flavio? In other words, also, res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. Now, you don't say that with heart attacks, and you don't say that with arrhythmias or preventricular contractions or anything like that. But when someone is aphasic,
That speaks for itself. You just look at it, whether you are, say, a master's degree holding speech pathology, speech therapist, you look at, oh, that's aphasia. Or a doctor, a neurologist, that's aphasia. You don't have to do any neurologic, because if someone is in the midst of an aphasic attack, you can say, person, woman, man, camera, TV, and they won't be able to say it because they're in the middle of an aphasic attack or an aphasic onset. This might be a good time to remind people I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the radio. But one does gather, if one is paying attention, a certain degree of knowledge over time. Let's check that quote again from Dr. Conley, is it?
Mentioned that would require anesthesia, and that's typically either the brain or the heart. That's typically what it involves. So we asked Dr. Conley about it at the time. What he subsequently said is that the president did not have any chest pain, nor was he evaluated or treated for any urgent or acute issues. He did not undergo any specialized cardiac or neurological evaluations.
If you were to write that down or see that in print, there's a whole lot that that statement doesn't cover. Specialized tests, Steve in New York says, is that the basic test for dementia he talked about that he aced? Would that be a specialized test, or am I reading too much into that? Well, he took it later. That's why he took it later. They were trying to find out if there was any lasting damage. That's what the Montreal assessment is about. Person, woman, man, camera, TV.
So here we are, you know, and medical information is understandably very protected, and so we may never know. But I think it's safe to say, so many months later, it still doesn't add up. That urgent, if not emergent, visit to Walter Reed on a Saturday typically is related to things that they say didn't happen. So here we are.
A glorious President Donald J. Trump was wanting to urgently see recovering heroic American military members and immediately wanted and demanded to be taken to Walter Reed so that he could appreciate them to the degree to which they need to be appreciated. It's nothing more, nothing to see here. This is not what it appears to be. Stop believing your lying ears and lying eyes.
Now, what is the precedent here, right? Yes, medical information is private, but he is the elected leader of this country, and there's a certain obligation by practice, previous practice at least, to share that information.
Stop asking more questions, silly American journalist. These are not droids you're looking for. Have you not seen movie Star Wars?
Is this a break with past practice to not be forthcoming?
Certainly, if what Michael Schmidt wrote in his book is true, that they were considering invoking the 25th Amendment, that would be very different than previous precedent. You know, we heard about this with Reagan back in 1981. Paperwork was drawn up at the time that the assassination attempt occurred. And twice with President George W. Bush, both times for colonoscopies, the 25th Amendment was invoked, at least the first time, where the presidency was handed over to Dick Cheney for a couple of hours.
I'm president here. Nope, I'm dead again. Damn it, it'd be nice when I get that new heart.
During that time. So that was done. It was disclosed. They were very transparent about it. In this case, it sounds like the paperwork, again, according to Michael Schmidt's reporting, was drawn up, but was not actually executed, and we were not, as journalists or the public, not informed about it.
Is nothing you need to know about, silly American, silly American peasant.
And there was the incident with the pretzel, right? You remember during the Bush presidency. John, just very quick, before we go.
No. So
Sanjay Gupta's disturbed. And then the icing on the cake is Nitwit Nero's own response to it, which is why the press chop shop had to put out what they put out. So it's clear that in this stuff that they've talked about, out of Michael Schmidt's book, well, it led Corona Caligula to run to his Twitter feed, where he thumbed,
"It never ends. Now they're trying to say that your favorite president, me."
Because we have to be reminded who our favorite president is.
"Now they're trying to say that your favorite president, me, went to Walter Reed Medical Center, having suffered a series of mini-strokes. Never happened to this candidate. Fake news. Perhaps they're referring to another candidate from another party."
Everything he does is pure projection. That's all. Nothing but. So when he says he didn't, well, he's a pathological liar. So probably he either did and doesn't remember, or he did and does.
"Your favorite president, me."
Which then led many in this country to point out that, well, okay, and that's when Don Winslow put up the Israel speech.
"Let us rethink old assumptions and open our hearts and minds to possible and possibilities. And finally, I ask the leaders of the region, political and religious,
political and religious,
Israeli and Palestinian, Jewish and Christian and Muslim, to join us in the noble quest for lasting peace. Thank you. God bless you. God bless Israel. God bless the Palestinians. And God bless the United States. Thank you very much." Thank
you. Yeah. Really can't play that too many times. Yeah.
"I didn't have a series of mini strokes. Joe Biden had a series of mini strokes."
So, given his behavior, it seems pretty clear that something happened. And the something that happened again on August 1st. May we live in interesting times. And of course, his disordered, demented mind includes the recent claim.
"There was an entire airplane filled with rioters and looters."
He said this in a sit-down interview with Frau Ingram, Frau Eva Ingram, over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and it was so bad that she had to handhold him and walk him back from it. She herself was probably horrified to the extent that she's capable of it, being horrified. Jesus God. So this is kind of one of those sit back and watch and wait sort of things. Well, apparently I'm not the only one getting correspondence from the Trump campaign. Dustin just sent an email along, or sent a note along. Poor Matt from Trump HQ. Poor guy sent me a text for a third time, and I'm hoping he leaves me alone now. Yeah, it don't count on it. I'm getting 8-10 emails a day. Anybody else doing this would be marked a spammer. Jeez. Oh, and back to Peace Data website that got busted. Brother Deacon Asa said, "It's hopelessly frustrating to watch members of the Putin fan club look at sources like Peace Data, WikiLeaks, etc., and bless their hearts, not realize that these sources never air Russia's dirty laundry. Isn't that a dead giveaway?" No, it's not that giveaway, because in glorious Mother Russia, we have no dirty laundry. Primarily because we have no laundry. Dirty or otherwise, we wear what we have. We are not profligate running dogs of capital. Wait, we are. Well, laundry that is dirty is a glorious state secret of Mother Russia. Hey. It's very simple, Stephen New York says. Someone just needs to ask this question. So, what did he go to Walter Reed for? I think the question was asked and not answered. And no judge there to compel an answer. As to the Israel speech, Steve says, yeah, I could buy that it was an issue with dentures or something like that, but, well, among other things, Donald Trump does not have dentures. Has glorious own teeth. However, there are too many other aspects of that. Slower speech, etc., tells me it wasn't just dentures. No, I think there's some serious dry mouth going on. Come on, Steve. No, I mean, don't do this, but you try snorting 2 4-foot-long reels of Adderall and see if you get a little dry mouth. As to the bunch of men in black on a plane, Steve says, it would not surprise me if he'd seen this photo and just shit it out of his mouth. It's a photo of a group of Hasidic Jewish men on an airliner. Well, who knows but what Stephen Miller may have shown him that and said, you see, sir, they're Antifa men. Wearing all black on planes. You understand?
Oh.
Christ, President Montgomery Burns without the charm.
Release the hounds.
And so, he blathered on about the airplane full of rioters and looters. Just ponder that for a minute.
Stop. Bob, stop telling us what to ponder.
We haven't done that in a while. So everybody goes through ticketing. The rioters and looters, all dressed in black, waiting patiently there to board the plane. They get on the plane. They go to their assigned seats. And they're all just sitting there, and they're completely well behaved, and get until they get to where they then they get off the plane and they deplane in regular order, and they only get to rioting and looting when they get to where they're going. Yeah, okay, yeah. So knowing that the nation, or the people who are awake in the nation, we're looking at that insane story told by a man deep in the throes of dementia or tertiary neurosyphilis or the like. Oh, and by the way, last week I mentioned Agnes and I watching over on Netflix. We watched Capone. Yeah, it was a fine, fine acting performance. Tom Hardy playing Al Capone in the final year of his life. Al Capone died of the effects of tertiary neurosyphilis. It might be worth a watch. Just to see, because Tom Hardy obviously put in the work on this, and just to see him, I wonder if that was some means of providing a sort of a, you know, hey, look, this is what it looks like. That kind of madness. Because there were no few moments when Agnes and I kind of looked at each other, because, you know, we got this thing that has developed over the course of nearly three decades, where she lives in my head and I live in hers, and sometimes they intersect and we just look at each other. And is that, do you think that, and we nodded, yes. So if you got Netflix, maybe you want to knock out 90 minutes of your life by watching Capone and see a well-acted rendition of what it looks like when a person is all the way gone on tertiary neurosyphilis. Because from a historic standpoint, Al Capone, as strange as it may seem, Al Capone was one of the first people in the United States to receive the new wonder drug penicillin as a therapy for tertiary neurosyphilis. However, he was too far along in the process for it to cure the syphilitic process, but he got it in 1942, and it bought him, 6 more years of life by slowing the process. And he is madder than a March hare. Because there's not a lot of, I didn't look at YouTube. Maybe there's YouTube videos of people in the end stage throes of tertiary neurosyphilis. Remember, the 90s were Donald Trump's sexual Vietnam. Roy Cohn was still alive.
Roy, why does it hurt when I pee?
No, wait, that's gonorrhea. Never mind. Maybe that's what all the heavy orange makeup's for. Covering up the lesions. Oh, who knows? Wild speculation on my part. But nonetheless, he knew that, that America was looking at him going, what? When he was talking about the plane full of people and dark shadows, you know. Flavio says, I like Barnabas Collins in Dark Shadows. Yeah. So today, rather than saying, I don't know what I was saying, because he can't, he always has to double down on whatever madness has gone before. Today we got this.
Tell us if Jacob Blake or anyone say it. Will you be meeting with the family of Jacob Blake?
I don't know yet. We'll see. We'll be making that determination. I don't know yet.
Mr. President, can you tell us more about this plot that you were referring to on Fox News last night?
Which?
This plot of people gathering on a plane in here?
Yeah, I could tell you that I could probably refer you to the person and they could do it. I'd like to ask that person if it was okay, but a person was on a plane, said that there were about six people like that person, more or less. And what happened is the entire plane filled up with the looters, the anarchists, the rioters, people that obviously were looking for trouble.
Now, how does that work? Okay, everybody here who's loot, who's here to loot, raise your hand. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay, that's the looters. All right, everybody who's here to riot, please. Now, looters, you can't raise your hand twice. Rioters, 1, 2. Okay. Protesters? Okay. We gotta keep this straight. Looters don't riot, rioters don't loot, and neither rioters nor looters protest, and protesters, you can't riot or loot. Union rules, okay? Don't make me report you to the shop steward.
And the person felt very uncomfortable in the plane. This would be a person you know, so I will see whether or not I can get that person. I'll let them know, and I'll see whether or not I can get that person to speak to you, but this was a first-hand account of a plane going from Washington to wherever, and I'll see if I can get that information for you. Maybe they'll speak to you, maybe they won't.
From Washington to wherever? Portland? Kenosha? L.A.? I mean, where? Chicago? Yeah, looters. Rioters.
They made the person very uncomfortable.
Yeah, what? The person was afraid that the person was going to get rioted and looted and protested on the plane? I am so motherfucking tired of these motherfucking looters and these motherfucking rioters on this motherfucking plane. Somebody call Sam Jackson.
Are you concerned at all by the armed militias on the streets? Are they worries or are they to be applauded?
I think a lot of people are looking at what's happening to these Democrat-run cities and they're disgusted. They see what's going on and they can't believe this is taking place in our country. I can't.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but I do look at what's happening in these cities and I am disgusted. I'm disgusted that the cops are running wild and killing people of color with apparent impunity. What's his name? The AG of Kentucky announced yesterday, well, you know, we've gotten the forensics evidence back from the lab about the bullets that killed Breonna Taylor. Of course, we can't draw any conclusions from that. How about that? Can't draw any conclusions. Son of a gun. Because, well, if we were to draw any conclusions, it might be that it was cold-blooded fucking murder. Because remember, the cops went through Breonna Taylor's door on a no-knock warrant looking for somebody who was already under arrest, and they had the wrong apartment in the first place. And somehow the attorney general, the maggot attorney general of the common poverty of Kentucky, that's a good one. Well, they can't, we don't want to rush to judgment. Where's the body cam footage? And why does it take months to get body cam footage? Do these police departments not understand that the time that it takes to release the body cam footage it makes it more suspect and not less? Yeah, people are disgusted by what's going on in these cities. They are, if they've got any morals. On the other hand, he's talking about Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers and having a shit hemorrhage over the constant drumbeat of fear and terror that's being pumped into the body politic by the likes of Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda,
and, of course, Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground.
I can't believe it either. One of the reasons I'm making the trip today and going to Wisconsin is we've had such a big success in shutting down what would be right now a city that would have been Kenosha, a city that would have been burnt to the ground by now. And we're going to really say hello to law enforcement and the National Guard. And it all stopped immediately upon the National Guard's arrival. So, you know, it'd be easy to stop. I saw last night where these radical anarchists were trying to get into the mayor's house, and lots of bad things were happening to this poor, foolish, very stupid mayor. I mean, how he could be mayor, I have no idea. But all he has to do is call, and within 10 minutes, their problem will be over. As you know, they have to call us. They have to call and request help. All he has to do is call, and the problem will end. They had tremendous numbers of people really harassing him horribly, and I guess trying to break into his house. And he still sticks up with them because he's a fool. Only a fool would stick up for him like that. These are anarchists. These are agitators. They're rioters. They're looters. They're bad people.
How about the cops that shot a young man in the back 7 times? In the back. Yeah, are they good people? Are they very fine people? Because, see, it turns out there's a problem. A deep problem with the Kenosha Police Department. And we have here footage from a while back of the sheriff of Kenosha. Kenosha County, Wisconsin. His name is Sheriff David Beth. And it's made the rounds, but it probably needs to find its way into the historical record that is this program. Yes, you're right, Randy and PA. They are matching Naugahyde Barkaloungers, Emery and Marvelines. Do you have any idea how many Naugas have to die for a pair of matching Naugahyde Barkaloungers? The horror. The horror.
Let's put them in jail. Let's stop them from...
Again, this is the sheriff of Kenosha County talking about young black men who happen to have stolen things. Understand, we're not talking about anything but theft.
Truly, at least some of these males going out and getting 10 other women pregnant and having small children. Let's put them away. At some point...
Going out and getting 10 other women pregnant and having small children. Small children! Because Sheriff David Beth of Kenosha County, Wisconsin, is a surefire titanic intellect. Because you know how it is with those people. You're lucky if they're only having small children. It's when they have the big children that you know you've really got a problem.
Truly, at least some of these males going out and getting 10 other women pregnant and having small children. Let's put them away. At some point, we have to stop being politically correct.
Sorry, can I...
And John Oliver was featuring that. Basically, a lifetime. A lifetime prison sentence warehousing young black men for... I'm not exactly sure what.
They cross. These people have to be warehoused. No recreational time in the jails. We put them away. And maybe we got to do is build warehouses that after this generation is gone, they've perished in these buildings.
Perished?
We can turn them into something else. Maybe it'd be malls. Maybe Amazon will buy them as warehouses later.
Yeah, notice that this Republican piece of shit, even in a a hypothetical as noxious and hateful and fascist as this. You can't. Hey, maybe we could turn them into public housing. Nope. Got to be an Amazon warehouse or a mall. You know, where good white people can go shopping.
But at some point, we have to get rid of this group of people. We have to lock them up. I don't think I'm saying anything different than most people in society aren't thinking, but they're afraid to say it.
No, decent people are not thinking that, Sheriff David Bath of Kenosha County, Wisconsin. You're espousing Nazi ethnic cleansing. You're espousing a genocide. He said, we have to get rid of these people. Well, gee, why not just, bullets cost money. Hey, how about it? What have we been talking about? The infiltration of law enforcement by fascists. And there it is in broad daylight. For anybody to see who cares to see. My God. Oh, and what Flavio was talking about with dark shadows, this is that that signal moment from Ava Brown, Laura Ingraham's interview with Corona Caligula.
I'd like to mention Biden because he's not controlling anything.
Who do you think is pulling Biden's strings? Is it former Obama officials?
People that you've never heard of. People that are in the dark shadows. People that...
Oh, what does that mean? That sounds like conspiracy theory. Dark.
Yeah, why are you asking, Laura? You're the one that sat him down for the goddamned interview, you stupid human being. That's a dog whistle to the Q people. Q.
Shadows. No, people that you haven't heard of. They're people that are on the streets. They're people that are controlling the streets. We had somebody get on a plane from a certain city.
This is the origin of the whole... Yeah.
This weekend. And in the plane, it was almost completely loaded with thugs wearing these dark uniforms, black uniforms with gear.
Uniforms. Antifa has uniforms now. Well, somebody's got to be procuring the uniform. Rand Paul probably needs to subpoena them.
They're in this and that. They're on a plane.
Where's this?
I'll tell you sometime, but I...
Yeah. What must it be like to be Laura Ingraham? I don't ask that sarcastically. I mean, you're being paid a shit ton of money by Rupert Murdoch for spreading the most bilious examples of hate-riddled fascism. Do you think there's ever any moment of cognitive dissonance? This is a perfect example of the quote that I use for my tag on my email. Kurt Vonnegut. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Laura Ingraham, if she has a conscience, keeps it drowned out by an endless loop of the chorus of "We're in the money, we're in the money." That's all I can figure. That or just a straight up sociopath and has no conscience whatsoever to be bothered by. Jude pointing out, Portland is not burning down.
No, not by a long shot. Jude says, sends along a photograph, lots of green space, green living trees, U.S. courthouse, entire area of blocks are clean. Yet I have not been to the other areas in Portland where noted fires are set after hours. The Patriot Prayer Warrior that was shot on Saturday, that occurred several blocks north of the courthouse, which I drove down when arriving earlier, and nothing stuck out in terms of a riot area. No, Jude, please, dear, understand. This is the exact same thing as the caravans full of scary Mexicans and Central Americans that was headed for the border and going to overwhelm the country that we were constantly bombarded with in 2018 in the run-up to those midterm elections. It didn't work because we took the House. The question is, will it work now? And in a situation such as we are in now where, what, only 37% of white voters surveyed supports Black Lives Matter? Well, it's having some level of impact. That's unavoidably true. Darlene in Connecticut pointing out, Laura Ingraham has to be a hollow, miserable person. I think, Darlene, we'd like to think that because we have this innate notion of what justice must look and feel like. But there's way too much empirical data out there of way too many people who, as Kurt Vonnegut noted, function well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society. Because one of the things that fascism and capitalism have in common, and the two can go hand in hand, we know that, is that they serve to make sure that people are not troubled by their consciences. Because they're consumed with consumption. You remember in 2001 when George W. Bush's response to the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and the plane that corkscrewed into the dirt in Pennsylvania? Well, it didn't really corkscrew into the dirt. It scattered over 10 or 15 miles, almost like a missile had hit it in midair or something. His response was to tell Americans, hey, go to Disney World, get on a plane, go shopping. We'll take care of Osama bin Laden. Remember that? That is the classic capitalist fascist response to crisis. Can you imagine, say, January of 1942, an FDR in a fireside chat saying, my fellow Americans, we are at war, and as patriotic Americans, I need you to go down to the general store and buy a ham, some canned goods, perhaps a new set of tires. Because our troops don't need those things. We just need you to look the other way. Of course not. It would have been madness. Steve in New York, observation. We all know that the crazy has continued to be off the charts every day. However, is it me or is the crazy over the last couple of days really off the charts? Bobby's on a completely different set of charts the last couple of days. Yes and no, Steve. This is the exponential nature
of a feedback loop. If you've ever been somewhere where a microphone and a speaker created a feedback loop, you know that that thing, it starts off bad, and then it escalates rapidly to the point of unbearability. This is not a boating accident. This is a deliberate attempt to drive people to disgust people with the political process. I've said this over and over again, and we would do well to pay attention. If you can get enough people disgusted enough to stay away from the polls, then you don't even have to worry about what's going to happen on November 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. Because there's every likelihood in the world that on November, the night of November the 3rd, with only the people who have gone to the polling place and voted counted, Donald Trump will declare victory as soon as the polls close in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone. He's certainly not going to wait for Hawaii to come in. He will declare victory based on both popular vote and that hateful anachronism from our vicious slavery past, the Electoral College. And then, as the mail-in ballots are counted and his numbers decrease to the point that he is eventually defeated, he will shriek that the election was stolen from him based upon fraudulent ballots. The lawsuits will be filed, and he will then move into that end game of this toxic, disingenuous, dishonest, un-American, unpatriotic electoral strategy. As to Sheriff Beth in Kenosha County, Wisconsin, Megan says, subject line, impregnating several women. I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that Sheriff KKK isn't talking about the Brock Turners of the world, is he? God, why doesn't he just get out his white hood and be done with it? That at least would be honest. And the thing is, that was not recent. That was just surfaced because there has been an undercurrent, a filthy undercurrent of nasty racism in Wisconsin for a very long time. I was hearing about it back in the previous decade when we'd do Radio Rose and an African-American broadcaster would come down from Milwaukee and talk about it. Problems of race in Wisconsin. Note for Jude of the Great Northwest from Megan. It is my understanding, as someone who lives in Northern Virginia, that when COVID Caligula complains about the Democratic-run cities, he's ginning up his base for support by signaling to others that these blue cities are just overrun with riots, looters, and arson. His supporters hear him yawp about this, and their response is, of course, to drive in with their big trucks, their Trump flags, and their guns for the express purpose of restoring order. That's what he wants. He wants these cities overrun with his supporters so he can either rejoice at the people who commit violence in his name or use it as an excuse to send in federal troops, regardless of what the mayors say, just like he did in Portland. This is a dog whistle, Megan advises, and a warning. Jude, please be prepared, and all caps, be careful. Jude says, only affirm that BLM is focused on change and not damage, and that the Trumpsters, etc., are the ones. I realize you and the Horn know the lies sent out by you-know-who. As far as your question regarding being about what it must be like to be Laura Ingraham, Jude says, I've often pondered how these people, especially women, can live with themselves. Reminds me of a death on hospice decades ago. The woman actually growled herself into death. And her husband, a truly dear soul, was actually relieved. I share with all due respect, Bob, yet there are times certain situations must be made known. Indeed. Peace, Jude. Peace. Stroke reversal. Going back to the...
I didn't have a stroke. Joe Biden had a stroke. I'm not the puppet. You're the puppet.
Remember when he said that to Hillary Clinton? As for trying to reverse stroke damage, David in South Carolina sends along from the Mayo Clinic stroke information base. An injection of TPA is usually given through a vein in the arm within the first 3 hours. Sometimes the TPA can be given up to 4.5 hours after stroke symptoms started. This drug restores blood flow by dissolving the blood clot causing the stroke. And David asks simply, remember the bruise that looked like an IV bruise in the back of his hand? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. A little bit of time travel from James in Illinois. By the way, we've entered the third hour of the program. We got $45 to finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Hopefully, well, I was hoping I'd be done talking about it by now, but I'm not. It'd be great if we could wipe out those last $45. The one before 9/11. Does anyone, James asks, remember the story that everyone was on the edge of their seat waiting for the other shoe to drop the day that the plane slammed into the towers, the Pentagon, and that field in Pennsylvania? I do, but when I ask people, very few can remember what it was. Maybe that's what the Don's waiting for, something that will take it off the national scandal battlefield. Gary was relieved, but I'm sure as shocked as the rest of us. Oh, God, that's a real brain teaser. What was it? All right, you're going to have to send the answer, James. Randy in PA, I told my friend about Trump's 6-year statute of limitations, and he said, other people will never believe you because it's not been on their TVs. A lot of truth in that. I think the fact that reality is reflected in the telescreens is best exemplified by the content of Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. God, so much stuff for one tiny little 3-hour segment of time. Iowa continues to burn. Not from looters or anarchists or... No, from the Don-demic. And the maggot governor of Iowa, Kim Reynolds, a photo surfaced of her... with a bunch of people not wearing masks when she finally got around to touring the areas that had been devastated by the derecho. Yeah, no masks. Nothing, no. And so she herself was a spreader. Jesus. Iowa and West Virginia. Oh, yeah, West Virginia. I know it seems like a small number, but it wasn't that long back, just a couple of days,
WOWK TV 13, Charleston, Huntington, reported terrible news this morning as COVID-19 claims another 10 lives overnight, pushing the West Virginia death total to 212. My county is officially, along with Logan County and neighboring Kanawha County, red. So, naturally, what is the governor of West Virginia, make West Virginia great big old governor, Jim Justice, what's he worried about? High school football. Yeah, really. Because since Fayette County, Kanawha County, and Logan County have all gone red, well, we can't be playing no football. Isn't that terrible? I wish I was kidding. That's what he's upset about. Because a bunch of maggots stood in the rain on Saturday at the west side of the state capitol here in West Virginia. And it was parents and students there. You can play Waldo about Waldo with the masks with this photo, too. There's a few. Not a lot. And the protesters are arrayed against Jim Justice. And he was there. They were there to protest the fact that we ain't gonna be playing football. How are we supposed to have a ski year if we ain't playing football? And so yesterday, make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice announced that he had done come up with a plan. Because playing football is more important than the health and well-being of the communities in which these high schools exist. And so what he said is, now I know just how much playing sports means to our communities and our children. This was Saturday when he was talking to the assembled mask-hole COVIDiots in Charleston. I know just how much playing sports means to our communities and our children. And the COVIDiots chanted, let them play! Let them play! Let them play! And make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice responded, now in no way, shape, form, or fashion, we're not going to be pressured by anybody standing and hollering outside. Yeah. And then, as of yesterday, he came up with his big plan. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to play us some football there in Kanawha, Fayette, and Logan counties because folks love their football and Jesus and me and Co. Don't forget how much we love the Co. So here's the plan. Every player, and y'all can play this coming Friday, if every player and every coach and every cheerleader and everybody in the band, and that means the majorettes too and the flag corps and everything, and the folks working in the concession stand and the folks up there in the booth and the referees and the photographers and the videographers, if everybody gets them a COVID test and tests negative, then we can play football on Friday. Nothing about people in the stands getting COVID tests.
And never mind the fact that, wait, suddenly we can turn around a COVID test because we got to play football? I mean, I love football, please. But we got it. We can turn around a test in 3 days' time so we can know if everybody can play football in Kanawha, Fayette, and Logan counties. And yet somehow or another, we haven't been able to do that in situations that would have made a hell of a lot more difference. Because, see, you know, we got outbreaks in prisons and nursing homes, places like that. Kanawha County, the largest county in the state, Tom Williams, the Kanawha County Superintendent of Schools, said, "We thank state officials for this option for our students, but we've collectively decided that our focus should be on making sure that we do everything in our power to get our students back to school. I'm proud of our coaches and principals for continuing to focus on the start of our school year." And then Fayette County, my county, stepped in and said, "Nah, I don't think so." And then pulling up last, Logan County said, "Nah, not us either." And so the COVIDiot parents and the COVIDiot children are all kinds of upset because we're not going to have us a bunch of super spreader events, at least not yet this Friday. And, you know, we moved from orange into red. Of course, our problem is made worse here in Fayette County because we're not just spreading it amongst ourselves. We got folks from places like South Carolina and Florida and Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York and Colorado and God Almighty, all helping spread it along too. Even as this lying sack of shit administration, including the president, tries to twist a number that was published by the CDC recently. The CDC pointing out that something like 91% of all the deaths from COVID-19 included a comorbidity, which prompted Nitwit Nero and the White Wing disinformation machine to announce that CDC quietly admits that only 9% of cases, or no, only 9,000 cases were actually people killed by COVID-19, that the rest of them had something wrong with them. They didn't even include that part. Comorbidities, though, include the vast number of children in this country who suffer from asthma. Thanks, coal industry! And the vast number of people in this country who suffer from type 2 diabetes. Thanks, high fructose corn syrup corn industry. Thanks, big sugar. Yeah. And all manner of the various and sundry illnesses that plague our poorly cared for country. And along the way, though, yesterday, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, said he, "I'm going to allow the bars in Mon County to reopen. Now, we closed them on July 13th because folks wasn't able to get properly liquored up and then engage in social distance and not LARP and Smolik and Grabolate and Waller and Lollygag all over each other and spray and spew the virus. But school's back in session at the university, so I'm opening up the bars again." This, of course, as Monongalia County went from yellow to orange on the scale. The positive test rate for returning WVU students stands near 20%.
but make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice said of the decision to reopen the bars. That decision was made when our numbers were coming down, down, down. That decision was made umpteen days ago. Wouldn't be fair to the owners of the bars to make them close back down again. It becomes real challenging for these counties, talking about the counties that have universities and large colleges like Cabell and Monongalia. But he's willing to sacrifice our children, our teachers, our support personnel on the altar of his maggot hubris. The superintendent of schools for the entire state, a man named Clayton Birch, said that if counties in West Virginia are green or yellow, they will be forbidden to open on September 8th with fully remote learning. So children will have to go to school. They'll have to get the virus. They'll have to spread it around their churches and their families. Their teachers will have to get it. Their bus driver will have to get it. The custodians will have to get it. The lunch ladies will have to get it. And then if it gets bad enough, maybe we'll wise up and go to remote learning. Because, you know, stupid hillbillies have to learn the hard way. I mean, what do you want? This is a state that has, on an annual basis, killed 1,000 innocent West Virginians a year just so some godforsaken coal executive can line his pockets. 500 mountains gone, 2,000 miles of streams buried. God only knows how many ultrafine, what measure of ultrafine particulates in the air breathed by people who couldn't see them, smell them, taste them, feel them, nothing, and die. But State Superintendent of Schools Clayton Birch declared, "We know 70% of the families have asked for in-person classes, so we really, really need to open for our students. All remote learning should be only under extreme circumstances." Well, Superintendent Birch, what constitutes an extreme circumstance? How many dead is an extreme circumstance, Superintendent Birch? How many teachers horizontally crucified with a slash in their trachea and a garden hose down their gullet does it take before it's an extreme circumstance? How many fragile children with asthma stricken down by this disease does it take, Superintendent Birch, before you consider it an extreme circumstance? Not a day goes by that Agnes and I don't worry. Agnes, is, as I pointed out, is immunocompromised. I probably have some comorbidities. We know our eldest daughter is at risk. And we're hoping against hope that she'll be able to keep our grandchildren out of the viral cesspits of these public schools. But it will not be easy, because Jim Justice, well, he's a dedicated maggot, and he doesn't want to see this state. Well, you know the rest. Jesus. I have. Albert says, have you heard how crazy rural Texas is about high school football? I did, yeah. And for the same reason we are here, whether it be high school football, boys basketball, girls basketball, girls volleyball, girls softball, boys baseball, whatever sports these schools play, they serve as a glue that pulls the communities together. The communities rally around and orbit around these schools. Albert says, in certain towns, the high school football stadium may cost $1 million to build. They were financed by former students who are now in the oil business. They did it to get a tax deduction. Oh, yeah, there are high school football stadiums in Texas that put to shame some college stadiums elsewhere in the country. Fact. Absolutely. Clarence in South Carolina, I presume, says a governor voice. Bob, you need to come and get me off the floor. The Barney Fife impression's dead on. I can barely type this text because my laugh box is trying to exit my throat. Thanks for the therapy. Happy to help. Y'all think it's Barney Fife. I see Mr. Haney in my head. But whatever gives you a giggle. Jude, responding to Megan, says, please let Megan know of our gratitude for her concerns. Indeed, being aware, focused, and careful are disciplines yet never taken for granted. And yes, we're in a different territory. If she would consider aligning with us from 2 p.m. Wednesday, September 2nd through Thursday, September 3rd, that would be an energy put to good use. Thank you so much. Warmly, Jude. 2 p.m. Wednesday, September 2nd. I presume that's Eastern Daylight Time. Or is that Pacific Daylight Time? Because if it's Pacific, it's 5 Eastern where Megan is. Or if it's Eastern, it's 11 Pacific where you are, Jude. Steve in New York, University of South Carolina, I just saw they have 1,000 cases. Oh, yeah. And they'll do their dead level best to ignore them all because the Confederacy, look, I've been saying it all along. I'm not backing off of it because it's true. These maggot governors are bioterrorists, and so are their supporters. And they're trying to downplay the danger of this disease. And now they've got the notion in their heads that, you know, and it came straight from the White House. Well, sooner or later, we're all going to get it. And that somehow or another that'll confer herd immunity, which is just nuts. The herd immunity theory damn sure didn't work in Sweden. But there are some people who just don't matter. In fact, David in South Carolina stand points out, McGovernor just did the same. Must be their orders from Daddy Orange Face. Florida Governor DeSantis reopens nursing homes to visitors with restrictions. Oh, yeah, they're going to bump them off. You know, old people generally aren't much in the way of economic engines. Remember when the Lieutenant Governor of Texas said septuagenarians and up need to be willing to die for capitalism? Okay, thank you, Jude. It's 2 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, so that would be 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Megan, and anybody on the East Coast who would like to take time to stand. Wherever you are, just stand in silence with Jude and women standing. And there is another story down here that because Ron and Raleigh brought it up to me, and I'll go to the phones in a minute. Ron and Raleigh brought it up to me, and I had it in the stack. Hey, Bob, did you hear Breonna Taylor's boyfriend was offered a plea deal if he would drop the dime on Breonna as a drug kingpin? He refused the deal. Yeah. They were trying to cover their ass from a liability standpoint. Don't have to really worry about any criminal charges. That maggot lick spittle in the Kentucky Attorney General's office isn't going to do dick. But now they're worried about the money. And they tried to get Breonna Taylor's boyfriend to sign off on a plea deal that would have smeared his girlfriend, who was not a drug kingpin, and would have given them civil cover. She was an EMT, for Christ's sakes. No justice. No peace. No justice. No peace. Okay, so there's a little more than a half an hour remaining in the program. We got $45 to go to finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Please don't let this thing end that way, if it's at all possible. Nine folks at $5, etc. So, thanks in advance. Stephen, New York, says, Breonna Taylor, drug kingpin. I still can't figure out why anyone would want to straight up abolish the cops. I'd like to know. I mean, I really want to know day by day, minute by minute. I want sworn testimony of how you wind up going into her apartment when the guy you're looking for is already in jail, in custody. And it's not even the right apartment that you're no-knocking into. I'd like to see a really, really good, give-a-damn prosecuting attorney just lean into those fucking cops and cross-examine the very skin off their bones. You weren't thinking, were you, officer? You just went right through. You didn't even look at the number on the door, did you, officer? Did you double-check the warrant, officer? Because it's true, isn't it, officer, that if you double-checked, you would have realized that you were at the wrong goddamn place. Right, officer? But black lives don't matter, do they, officer? Well, probably never happened. Ralph's asked, does Jim Justice have a money investment in schools playing football? No, but he has a political investment in it because this state has turned maggot to the core. Remember, as of November 9th, 2016, this was the most maggoty state in the union. We have since been supplanted by Talabama, but we're still very maggoty. And so he wants to keep them happy, no matter how many hillbillies he has to kill. Megan, subject line, Breonna Taylor. She was asleep in her goddamn bed when she was shot. Jesus, how the fuck do you run a drug ring in your sleep? Holy shit, this is why people hate cops. Yeah, it is. And it's been going on for eons. Go read the opinion that Sammy Bad Breath Alito authored when he was sitting on the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that said it was okay to strip search a little girl because those people hide drugs on their children. Go read the opinion that he wrote on the Second Circuit when he said it was okay for cops to blow away a young black man who was running away from them, wasn't armed, and was no threat to them whatsoever. Sure, put a bullet in the back of his head. Go even further back and read U.S. v. Leon that says as long as the cops say that they were acting in good faith, an oopsie that gets somebody killed is no big deal. And if you want to read something stirring, read Justice Brennan's dissent in U.S. v. Leon. You might find yourself with a little patriotic stirring. Because that's a good one, that dissent. Uh-oh. According to the Washington Post, looks like, thanks, Sparky. Looks like the feds are getting ready to charge Elliot Broidy. Turns out he was another one of the foreign agents working on the Trump campaign. He raised millions for Nitwit Nero's campaign in 2016 and the Republican Party. I seem to recall this is also the same guy who was involved in being a baby daddy on the down low. Do I recall that correctly? I think I do. Yeah. Right. And did you know that the World Health Organization has a global vaccination cooperation pact? A cooperative effort to develop and deploy a coronavirus vaccine? Yeah, Nitwit Nero has said that the United States is forbidden from participating in that. The professional liar spokes creep Judd Deere at the White House, who hopefully by the time he's done lying for Donald Trump will not be able to get, won't even be able to get hired at Fox News or ONAN, the network that spills its news upon the ground. Yeah, Judd Deere said that the United States will continue to engage our international partners to ensure we defeat this virus, but we will not be constrained by multilateral organizations influenced by the corrupt World Health Organization in China. Fucking idiot. By the way, Wuhan opened its some 2,590 schools today. Their children are back in school because they took it seriously. We don't. We just let people die. That's true. Albert reminds us, Albert in Rhode Island, Trump actually compared the Blake shooting to missing a 3-foot golf putt. He compared a man's life to missing a 3-foot putt. Evil fucker. Okay, let's go check in with Scott. Yo, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm here. Are you there?
I am here. I mean, I'm as here as I'm ever anywhere.
You sound a little roomy. You got a fan going back there?
Yeah, I thought I had moved that far enough away. Hang on a minute. Let me.
It's either that. It's either a fan or a white noise machine.
How about that? Is that any better?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Well, or wait a minute. Is that Kaylee Maganini's porn name, White Noise Machine?
Well, if it's not, it ought to be. What has happened to 2020, Bob? I mean, other than the obvious. the speed with which it is zooming on by. I looked at my old calendar on the wall, and I said, yo, it's September. And you know what that means, Bob? The Maitlety song.
No, I was thinking... No.
Oh, it's a long, long while from May to December, you know.
Yeah. I posted earlier today, the nicest thing about September arriving is, you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire's September.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I've kind of, you may have noticed, I've kind of been out of the loop. I just get to a point where it's like a sponge or whatever. Has a saturation point. Sponges, especially those big old fat natural sponges, can soak up a lot of liquid. But there comes a point when it reaches what they call the saturation point, and it's useless to try to get it to take in any more because it's reached its limit. And I had to kind of step back for a wee bit, just for my own sanity and preservation. And that's all you can do. The very literal all you can do is to just shut down for a wee bit, just to make sure that your emotional and psychological and spiritual engines.
That's gotten to where that's pretty much what I try to do on the weekends.
Yeah, well, and I know that.
I'm not kidding. Early on, I dreaded the weekends. I love doing this program. I still do.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, the overload is so intense, and just the existential exhaustion by the time that the end of the day comes on Friday, I need those 2 days now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how you do as well as you've done, given the balls that you have to juggle. You know, even.
That reminds me of that dog would bite you. Never mind. Go ahead.
Even if
juggling,
well, you'll have to ask the dog first.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway.
I don't know, Mister. That's not my dog. Sure. There's a million of them.
Well, what I'm saying is, even under quote normal circumstances, with just your typical GOP. Or shitty Democratic president in office, even under normal circumstances, it's a challenge some days to make sense of it and to get to, as the old preacher used to talk about, the news behind the news. I forget which one that was, but there'd be a guy, I swear to you, would come on the radio and he would just take the most innocuous, you know, Girl Scouts selling cookies in front of the JCPenney, you know, in Sheboygan. And he would somehow bring the devil into it. There was something evil and end-timey about it. I forget the guy's name. Maybe somebody knows. But I think he was out here in California, too. But I just cannot bring his name to mind. See, this is what it does to your brain, Bob. That's why
I had to ask about Elliot Broidy earlier, being the down low baby daddy, Ralph's serving as the Horn ad hoc research department. Jump back and said, yes, you do, Bob. You do remember correctly about Elliot Broidy. And remember, he's a good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian maggot. So it only makes sense that he would have, be baby daddy on the sly.
Yeah.
And I remember I remember at the time the story broke, some people were wondering if those were actually little Trump babies and he was taking the hit. Because because Elliot Broidy and Corona Caligula, well, there's a little bit of resemblance there.
Well, and to take a sidetrack, the other day when the football coach or the basketball coach, the old elderly guy from Notre Dame?
Oh, Lou Holtz, yeah.
When that old fucker was talking about, you know, the right of unborn fetuses,
there we go.
And women and you know, how, what's his name, Biden and Kamala have got a chain of abortion mills all over from coast to coast, all 48 states, plus Alaska and Hawaii, kids. You know, just beating that drum.
This is tasty. What is it? Baby. Baby what? Baby. Yeah, never mind. Passage from a novel.
Well, what I was thinking was, you know, I'll bet you if you talk to Mr. Cohen or any of Trump's current or former allies in the legal profession or their bookkeeper, you won't have to dig too deeply, probably, to find his name on a check and on the memo line it says taking care of a problem, you know, which is to say, ending a pregnancy.
Risk management.
Well, yeah, that would be the proper euphemism. But Jesus, and where is he getting these people from? I watched about as much of the GOP convention as I could stand, and that was a promo for it 10 minutes before it started. That was about all I could do. You know, because I can't I've had my limit of crazy thus far in the proceedings. I can't take another minute of this. This is why I don't know how you are when it comes to, I know organized religion is not a big thing for you, but in terms of creative,
I don't even care for the disorder. I don't even care for the disorganized variety.
All right. Creative visualization is a thing that some people are into. And I'm tickling, sorry.
Yeah, please save that for after the program.
Well, no. I've got to stir my coffee. I tried it.
I know, but it drives the listeners batshit.
Well, there seem to be a lot of things that drive the listeners batshit. What's one more going to do? Yeah, and I'm rinsing my spoon, too, Bob. Deal with it. a couple of things on my mind, and I don't know if I can go there.
Well, see, that's what happens when you start stirring your coffee. You lose your train of thought.
Yeah, maybe. Well, what I'm saying is creative visualization. I am looking toward the moment.
Yeah, you said you don't know how I feel about organized religion, but.
Yeah. The 1 minute after 12 on January 20th, 2021, when the white jacketed attendants sidle up to Mr. Trump. This is the moment that I'm visualizing. They lead him down off of the platform. They put him into the truck, and they say, "Mr. Trump, we're going for a ride in the car." And he likes to take rides in the car.
We're taking you to the country, Donnie, and you'll be able to play and romp and run free and just be happy all the time.
No, he's had enough of being happy all the time. This is where his phase of service comes into play. Stay with me on this, Bob, because this is creative thinking at its very best. The men in the white coats put Mr. Trump in the car, and they drive him, you're right, way out into the country. And they take him to a clearing in the woods. And they undress him all the way, and they bend him over a stump in the clearing, and they produce a funnel.
Let's stop with your. I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to visit.
All right, there's no. All right, there's no funnel. Envision someone in a clearing in the woods. It could be any of the 7.5 billion people on the planet. And envision a blue box of Morton salt. And envision the obvious place where the salt might be deposited. And then the men in the white coats go away in their little car. And the deer.
Deer. Oh, I forgot about the deer. Yeah.
The deer come out. It's the Orange Person Memorial Deer Lick. And that would be the first day of a service segment of someone's life.
Are you alleging that he's engaged in dereliction of duty?
Well, if he isn't now, he may be in the future. Yep. The deer and the antelope will give him the Heimlich maneuver because he won't be able to breathe, Bob. He just service is an alien notion to this man, unless it's self-service. I don't know. But anyway, that's where I've been. And you're right. You really do have to take the weekend, and if need be, in the middle of the week or the Monday or the Friday or whatever, take an extra day if you need it. You know, because there is a thing called preserving your abilities and your resources. And I know it in terms of the fundraising, it throws a wrench into that. But sometimes the thing has got to, you've got to take extraordinary means, you know, toward a longer goal. You get what I mean? I just, because I do worry. I do worry sometimes that a lot of us have gone into an overload situation, and we may not recognize it.
Well, I try to do something, you know, some little something every day that makes me happy, or that puts my mind at ease, or, you know, sometimes it's just getting a nap. Those are incredibly restorative. A good brief nap can save your soul.
I know. Now let me ask you: when you were a child and would have an afternoon nap that was required, it was mandatory, or did you have those? I know they were.
Oh no!
In my
first grade, you had to have your nap mat, and you had to. Everybody had to lay down for a nap, and none of those children napped.
Oh no! Hell no!
No, we all just kind of laid there and kind of laid there on the little foam rubber, you know, plastic coated mat, and just thought about all the fun things we could be doing if we weren't laying on a plastic mat in a hot August schoolhouse.
But the thing is, at that age, nap time was a dreaded time.
Oh, I hated it.
But then you get to where we are, I am and you are, and others in the Horn family, and God damn, I could use a nap long about now. You will make up excuses to get a nap in adulthood.
Yeah, but you gotta be careful, though, because you can seriously screw up your sleep schedule.
I know.
You know, too much nap in the afternoon, and the next thing you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you're going, but I got to get up at 6.
Yeah.
Because I do. I got to get up at 6 tomorrow. This because this is an interesting schedule I got going now.
And I wanted to revisit the Mr. Haney versus Barney Fife voice, if that's all right.
Okay.
I think it's, I don't know, but to my ear, it sounds more like Don Knotts, like Barney Fife.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe that's because he's a proud son of West Virginia. Maybe that's just karma.
Because Mr. Haney had kind of a, well, he also, you got to look at his mindset and his attitude and his approach to life. Mr. Haney was the carnival pitchman, the medicine show man who would come around in the wagon. And for a dollar a bottle, my friend, I will give you the elixir of the gods, made of a collection almost unknown of herbs and spices and roots, ruts, formulated by Pocahontas herself and given to the professor.
All right, Mr. Fields, you're talking about Mr. Haney and you're doing Mr. Fields.
Well, I can't do Haney either. I mean, I can barely do Fields.
All right, we're going to have to work on our Mr. Haney. Hang on here. Stand by.
Mr. Douglas, it's sing-songy, and it's like a little bit of brain damage or something. I don't know.
No, what it is, it's classic north-central, northwest Alabama. It really, really is.
For real?
Yeah, that's where he was from.
Huh.
If you need anything for the house...
I won't.
You might. All it said was I sold you a house, and that's what you got, a house. It's just what you need.
Well, it so happens that I'm planting tomatoes.
Mr. Douglas, you just had another lucky day.
All the pull-down signs.
You always show up with just what I need.
Well, let me put it another way. How is it you always need what I show up with?
It's the little crack in his voice. That's part of it. And if you... Wow, here's a rabbit hole. Let me posit a theorem.
All right.
There is a kinship line that runs from Mr. Haney to Larry, Daryl, and Daryl. Consider it now. Consider the vocal patterns of Mr. Haney there.
You just did something to my head when you made that connection.
Well, I actually noticed it because he did such a fantastic job Deadwood. But he's a Southerner too. I think he's from Georgia. So now we got Larry.
Larry, they think the snowmaking thing was a swindle.
Oh, dear. I guess they don't have the faith in us you do.
Go figure.
Why'd you withdraw all your funds from the bank this morning?
We moved it to another financial institution that was paying significantly higher interest and giving away toasters.
Now, just if you, for anybody, go back and look the two up. It's roughly the same dialect and accent.
Yeah.
And it's also the same zany, wacky, nutty plot line.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a cultural line that runs from Don Knotts through Pat Buttram to what's his name? Sanders?
I don't know the actor's name.
He recently retired, or I'll have it here in a second.
Speaking of actors' names, there was a guy, at the risk of going back to the 70s and 80s, or 60s and 70s, there was an actor who had, like, really brilliant yellowish hair.
William Sanderson.
William Sanderson, yes. Thank you. That's the actor. But this guy's name was Robert Easton, or Eaton, E-A-T-O-N, or E-A-S-T-O-N. And he would be on The Tonight Show. He was an actor, but he was also a vocal coach and could do, he had a little yellow goatee and mustache. And he could do virtually any dialect that you wanted, even dialects within countries, like in England. You can go 10 kilometers down the road in England and hear not a different language, but a different take on the same language in term of dialect, not dialect, but accent. Robert Eaton or Easton, if he has a video, because he taught, he was a coach for other actors who had upcoming roles where they needed to be like a Russian or, you know, the different part of the American continent or Canada or whatever. The guy was brilliant. And it would surprise me if he didn't have a book or a videotape explaining his techniques. Because he's been gone now probably for the better part of 15 or 20 years. But he was very highly in demand. And if you look him up on Internet Movie Database, under whichever name it is, Eaton or Easton, he was in a lot of films as an actor, but in his later career, he was strictly a vocal coach and a dialectician. And used to be, you can find clips of him on YouTube. He would visit with Carson on The Tonight Show from time to time, explaining the subtle differences between the you know, the accents and different things.
Yeah.
And you do the Scots accent, that, and I can never, and I have an aunt who's from Scotland, and I tried to get her to show me, to get my mouth around it, and I couldn't do it. I when I do characters or voices or whatever, they're not really, they're like, what is the word? Exaggerated. I don't know.
They're caricatures.
Caricature, yeah. I turned off the fan, Bob, to make the audio better. And
I appreciate
I'm
it.
Hot. And when I get hot, my head.
Yeah, you just got a note from Jake who said, please don't slurp your coffee into the mic. Yuck.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, goddamn. Ah.
No, you're an old radio hand. You know, you know we don't do that when the mic's open.
Oh, unless it's FM. You slurp the coffee way up next to the mic there.
Yeah, see, don't you just I asked you not to do it, and you did it.
That was a fake slurp. I didn't even real slurp. That was a sound effect.
Yeah, but it's theater of the mind, Scott. It's radio. Jake didn't know it wasn't a real slurp.
Well, what can I tell you, man? You're the ninth caller. Congratulations.
You oh, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh said, I want Donnie Bag of Donuts to put in Gen Pop and Sing Sing. None of this Jeffrey Epstein Country Club minimum security bullshit. I want him making small ones out of big ones.
Well, I have a feeling that he's not going to see the interior of anything at all restrictive. I don't even think house arrest and an ankle bracelet is going to be his eventual fate. Because look around you, Bob. Look at our recent history and how many of the truly bad ones saw a minute in any sort of confinement that is punishing or redemptive or revisional in any way in terms of bringing someone back to the, you know, to off the wayward path and onto decency. First of all, any opportunity for that was lost decades ago with this guy and all the other scoundrels. I'm a big believer in redemption and people recuperating from wayward acts and deeds and thoughts and schemes and stuff. But there also comes a point where it's like, it's too late. You know, maybe 30 years ago or in childhood or something, we could have done something. But that's it, man. You're gone.
Well, you'll get a kick out of this because one of the recent trending hashtags over on Twitter is bags of soup. Bags of soup. Because somebody found a transcript from one of his shit shows. And this really is for the ages. I mean, this is the disordered mind in its most disorderly. Trying to explain how dangerous the anarchists are. Well, you get this.
It's water. And then they have cans of soup. Soup. And they throw the cans of soup. That's better than a brick because you can't throw a brick. It's too heavy. But a can of soup, you can really put some power into that, right? And then when they get caught, they say, no, this is soup for my family. They're so innocent. This is soup for my family. It's incredible. And you have people coming over with bags of soup, big bags of soup, and they lay it on the ground, and the anarchists take it, and they start throwing it at our cops, at our police. And if it hits you, that's worse than a brick because it's got force. It's the perfect size. It's like made perfect. And when they get caught, they say, no, this is just soup for my family. And then the media says, this is just soup. These people are very, very innocent. They're innocent people. These are just protesters. Isn't it wonderful to allow protesting? No. And by the way, the media knows it better than we do. They know what's...
Yeah. Please. Please. Jesus. Just let's stop with the preliminaries and just move him on to the damn strawberries, okay? I just want to hear about the strawberries and the ice cream and who got the extra ice cream and where the strawberries went. Can somebody just please give him
a locker key?
No, really, somebody, please, just a little bit of guerrilla theater, whatever. Somebody pretending to be a friend of his say, you know, Mr. President, I the way I deal with my stress is I got a couple of ball bearings here and I roll them together in my fingers and you try it, Mr. President, and then he can stand there at the podium during the shit show and roll those ball bearings and tell us about the strawberries and it'll be and it will be done.
Clickety clack, clickety tack. Jesus. You do a better than average Bugs Bunny.
They thought I was crazy, but I fooled them. I caught them with the strawberries. I knew it.
Oh, well, between now and tomorrow, can you work out a version in Bugs' voice? Any soup today? I love how he gets fucking fixated on something. Somebody is going to have a field day.
You know, back in the 90s, there was a remake of Alice in Wonderland that was brilliant. And Gene Wilder played, oh, hell. He sang the song Soup.
I'll have to look that up.
What character was he playing? Oh, I got to look now. This is unbearable. Gene Wilder, Alice in... There it is. Popped right up. Ah, he was the Mock Turtle. He was the Mock Turtle.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see if we can get that here.
Beautiful soup, so rich and green, waiting in a hot tureen. Ooh, for such dainties would not stoop. Soup of the evening, beautiful soup. Soup of the evening, beautiful soup.
Beautiful soup.
Yeah, a duet, of course, with the Griffin.
Jeez. That's Trump. That's Trump there, singing about bags of soup. Well, he would be the soup Nazi, wouldn't he?
Eh, kind of.
No soup for you.
Meanwhile, James in Illinois says, tell us about the rabbits, George. Yep. Lee in New York says it was actually canned vegetables. You know, he threw the cans to avoid eating his vegetables. Well, remember, there's a story about him dumping the bowl of, his big brother Fred dumping the bowl of mashed potatoes on Donald's head. And it still pisses him off to be reminded of it.
Yeah. Well,
wait a minute. Steve in New York's gone pro again. Throwing bricks. Anyone can throw a brick unless your hands are so tiny you can't hold a glass of water. Ah.
There you go. If you want a treat, speaking of soup, early to mid-70s, you remember the H.J. Heinz Company?
Yep.
The purveyors of ketchup and pickles and different things? Well, they decided that they were going to rev up their soup division because they were a competitor against Campbell's condensed soups for a long time. And they still are in some parts of the world, although they gave up this market. They hired Stan Freberg to do a commercial for them featuring the singer and dancer Ann Miller for their version of condensed soup called the Great American Soup. And if you Google Great American Soup on YouTube, you will get the most lavishly produced one-minute commercial for a can of soup that you've ever seen.
Ann Miller was no slouch.
Oh, no, and neither was Stan Freberg. You look up some of his commercials that he did the pizza rolls commercials, and Jesus, what else did he do? He wouldn't do cigarettes and he wouldn't do booze, but Sunsweet prunes. I mean, have you ever tried to sell a prune to somebody? They're, some people don't like them because of the effect from eating them.
I love them.
So that's a challenge. Oh, they're great. They're great, and they're good for you. They've got, I forget which minerals and vitamins.
Iron. They have iron.
Iron, yes. But don't, you can't do your shirts with them. I'm telling
fiber.
You.
Don't forget the, don't forget the fiber. No, I used to make, there was a wonderful recipe my mother had for back in the Depression called prune cake. And in the modern era, nobody would eat it. So, you know, I remember my mom one time saying, watch this. Would you care for some dried plum cake? Yes, I would. Problem solved.
Yeah, it's delicious. We love it.
Yeah. And by the way, you got a note from Jeremy in Vermont who said, Scott, Bob's voices live in his head and now they live in ours as well. Like I said a few weeks back, I'm pretty convinced Rush has been dead for months and Bob's just doing the Well My Friends remotely at this point for him so the Russian morons don't have a sad.
Yeah.
Ah, busted, damn it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, just don't go looking on Google Earth. I mean, I don't know what to do with the fucking Gulf Stream. I don't know what to do. And there were all those cigar boxes full of OxyContin, and you know you can't take that shit back.
You could have a sale. The Rush Limbaugh Memorial OxyContin Sidewalk Sale.
Jesus.
Come on, come on.
All right, we're overtime. I got to get out of here, Scott.
Well, go away, damn you.
Don't go away, mad. Just go away.
But come soup. Back. All right, man. Take care of it and watch out for flying bags of soup.
You know I will.
Look both ways as you cross the street.
It's not so bad with the tomato-based soups, but Jesus Christ, when those cream-based soups get to going bad and they're stuck to you, I mean, it's like you're just a human walking ball of yogurt, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
There, took a pot shot at dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone. Ha ha! Victory is mine.
All right, Bob. Take care.
See you, Scott.
Be well.
Do you want to try? Feel free to slurp your coffee now. Later.
I'm slurping away. Bye bye.
And so we come to the end of the program. Yay! Bruce's memorial challenge was met and completed. Thank you to our anonymous friend, and thank you to Women Standing for jumping back in. Thank you both. Thank you so very kindly. That gets us off to a good start at the beginning of the month with, you know, the bills just, they never stop. Ugh. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thanks to everybody who responded. Thanks to all of you for your subscriptions. Again, our PayPal subscribers and our Patreon subscribers, the a la carte contributors, all everyone in combinations of all of the above sometimes. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in no matter what manner you may so choose. Thank you to our all volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Steve, by the way, explained the postage thing. These are probably flat rate envelopes, these return envelopes, but Rush, victory survey enclosed. The victory survey is so damn thick that they probably had to put the extra 3 1-cent stamps on just to keep it from being postage due. Cheap fuckers. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, a brand new, fresh episode of Malloy, all ready to roll. Mike's ready to roll at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, right here on the Horn, HeadOn.live, and you know, maybe hang out in the chat room, Truth Seekers, and have a blast. So that's on the way in about 50 minutes or so. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW. Net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And please, please stay home if you can. It's a scary thing when you realize you're living in a red county, and I don't mean politically, I mean virally. Stay home if you can. If you have to be out, wear your mask, wash your hands, don't touch your face, keep your social distance. And for pity's sakes, if someone's coming towards you, hollering about people who live in the dark shadows and throw bags of soup, avoid those people like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.